From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Officials from the 10-Nation Association of Southeast Asian Nations are in Manila for their 31st meeting. President Donald Trump is attending that two-day session. He's also holding talks with host Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte. Speaking ahead of the summit, Mr. Duterte sought to avoid confronting China over the South China Sea, calling it the region's number one economic powerhouse.
And we have to be friends. The other hotheads would like us to confront China and the rest of the world for so many issues. The South China Sea is better left untouched.
His comments followed an earlier offer by Mr. Trump to act as a mediator to ease disputes over territorial claims. Mr. Duterte also said he doesn't expect his controversial anti-drug program will be discussed when the two meet. The Asia Foundation's Stephen Rood said the controversial drug war has the backing of the public for now.
However, there is growing concern about the fact that so many people are killed in the course of that war, and that concern has been growing. So in the end, if that's the only way that the drug war is being fought, it could undercut support for it.
The crackdown has taken nearly 4,000 lives since last year. Rights groups criticized it over alleged extrajudicial killings. Mr. Duterte said he has never told the police to break the law. In Central African Republic, at least 7 people were killed, several others wounded in a grenade attack on a concert in the capital Bangui, as well as other reprisal shootings. The city and much of the impoverished landlocked nation has been embroiled in sectarian and ethnic violence between Muslims and Christians since a Muslim-led coup in 2013. The UN Security Council is scheduled to vote this week to authorize another 900 troops to reinforce the 12,000 there. This is VOA News. Before leaving Vietnam Sunday, President Trump said while he believes Russian President Vladimir Putin is sincere, he will back the assessment of U.S. intelligence agencies that concluded Russia meddled in last year's U.S. election. Steve Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, during an appearance on U.S. television, said Mr. Trump is trying to gain Russian cooperation in solving some of the world's problems.
The president has said that he believes in the intelligence. He's also said that he believes that Putin believes what he said. But it's really time to move on off this issue. I think the president was focused on very important issues such as North Korea and Syria, where we have to get along with and have common goals with Russia. And that's what's really important right now.
Mr. Trump also criticized members of the previous Obama administration's intelligence committee for suggesting Mr. Putin was trying to help Mr. Trump win last year's election. One of them, former U.S. Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, said the Russian leader is committed to undermining the U.S., said any other view is astounding and poses a threat to U.S. national security. A 7.3 magnitude earthquake jolted the Iran-Iraq border region late Sunday, killing more than 130 people and injuring hundreds more. The quake was felt as far away as Turkey and Israel. In Baghdad, this resident said glasses fell off his table and a fan shook. He said they were afraid they ran out of the house. The quake's epicenter located about 30 kilometers southwest of Halabja in northern Iraqi Kurdistan. Lebanon's Prime Minister Saad Hariri, who announced his surprise resignation November 4, said he plans to return to his country from Saudi Arabia within days. In a televised interview, since announcing he would step down, he said he intends to follow through on the constitutional process to resign. He warned the country is at risk of regional sanctions over Iran-backed Hezbollah's meddling in conflicts such as Yemen. UN Special Envoy Pramila Patton said soldiers in Myanmar, also known as Burma, have systematically targeted Rohingya women for gang rape during violence against the Muslim minority group as part of a month-long crackdown, forcing hundreds of thousands to flee. She made the comments after visiting a refugee camp inside Bangladesh, where more than 600,000 Rohingya Muslims have fled. She vowed to raise the issue of persecution with the International Criminal Court. In southern India, at least 16 people died when their tourist boat capsized in the Krishna River. The accident occurred about 25 kilometers from Vijayawada city in Andhra Pradesh state. And in central European country of Slovenia, 54-year-old President Borut Pahor, known for his frequent use of social media, was re-elected for a second term in a runoff Sunday, winning 53% of the vote against rival Marjan Saric, who garnered 47%. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Monday, November 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The people of the self-declared state of Somaliland are voting today in presidential election.
The number of registered voters is just over 700,000. I don't know how many are going to vote because it hasn't happened yet, but I would presume that the turnout will be fairly high.
Michael Walls is the chief of the International Observer Mission to Somaliland. Striking Uganda medical doctors defy their government's orders to return to work. The spokesman for the Sierra Leone People's Party says he fears he will be arrested today by the police. And in Liberia, George Weah responds to allegations that if he's elected president, he plans to bring Charles Taylor back to Liberia.
I know that he's working for a political party. He calls himself a lobbyist, you know. You know, I met Alan White, you know, when we started the CDC. He signed a contract with CDC, and he could not do the work, and CDC broke the contract. You know, he asked for indemnity, and CDC paid him, and that was it.
Senator George Weah, presidential candidate of the Coalition for Democratic Change of Liberia, and Gambian police on Sunday said, well, what was called a peaceful protest by the group Occupy Westfield. Bill Sturris plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of the self-declared state of Somaliland are voting today in a long-awaited presidential election amid tight security. Polls open at 7 a.m. local time today, Monday, and voters are allowed to cast their ballots until 6 p.m. Over 700,000 eligible voters will be choosing between three candidates, Munse Bahil, Abdullahi Mohamed, Iro, and Faisal Ali Wari. The incumbent Ahmed Mohamed Silanyo has decided not to seek a second term. A team of 60 international observers has been deployed in the six regions of Somaliland. Michael Walls, chief of the International Observer Mission, says today's election is different from previous ones in Somaliland.
I think it is different. It's different, for one, because it marks something of a maturing in the Somaliland electoral democracy. And I mean by that, that 2012 was an election that was really marred by some fairly significant levels of multiple voting and so on. And I think that election showed people that it was necessary to become a little bit more, or quite a lot more, sophisticated in terms of the preparation, organization for the election, the need for a voter register and things like that. So one of the ways it's different is that there is a voter register in place, and that voter register has been widely accepted as being pretty robust in terms of eliminating multiple registrations and so on. The other difference this time is that the incumbent president is not standing. So it means that going into this election, we know there's going to be a change in leadership.
And in terms of the registration, can you tell me about how many people have registered and are going to vote in this election? Where are they going to vote? And what's the feeling based on your observation?
The number of registered voters is just over 700,000. So those are the ones that are eligible to vote, that have voter cards and so on. I don't know how many are going to vote because it hasn't happened yet, but I would presume that the turnout will be fairly high because the voter registration process involves people registering and then picking up cards. So they've already shown quite a commitment to the process. In terms of where they're going to vote, everyone must vote in the place they registered. So again, and that's a traditional approach in Somaliland, or a long-established approach.
Technologically, the voting cards and so-called iris biometric system, tell us how this technology is going to work and how it's going to make this election more transparent and free and fair.
The iris scanning process, the biometric data that was used for the voter register, has been pretty important in achieving what I mentioned before, that we've got a voter register now which is widely seen as accepted as being pretty robust in terms of having eliminated the ability to register multiple times, for individuals to register more than once. So that means that there is a voter register in place which has really received very widespread support. So I think that makes a difference to the conduct of the election. It will shape the election in many ways.
And if we go back a little bit, this election should have taken place 2 years ago. Why it did not happen in 2015?
A combination of factors, I think. First of all, one of the reasons that was cited for the delay in March was the severity of the drought that was affecting Somaliland. Because, as I said, before people need to register and vote in the same location, the drought was pushing people out of their normal areas of habitation. So there was concern that people would not be able to register in a place they would then expect to be when the vote happened.
Michael Walls, the chief of the International Observer Mission to Somaliland, he was speaking with Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Medical doctors in Uganda have vowed to continue with their strike despite threats by Health Minister Dr. Ruth Jean Achen to suspend them if they do not return to work. Minister Achen says doctors are public servants and must therefore work or risk being fired. But Dr. Obuku Ekwaru, the head of the Uganda Medical Association, says medics as well as interns will withdraw even the emergency services that they are currently giving if the government fails to meet their demands. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Minister Achen called the doctors' strike illegal and said those organizing it are trespassers.
All the health workers in Uganda and the general public are hereby directed that the strike by Uganda Medical Association is illegal. All medical workers who were misled to join the strike must resume duty with immediate effect. All health workers who adhere to this directive shall not be subject to any disciplinary action. All health workers who resume duty shall be provided adequate protection by the government.
Acheng accuses the organizers of the strike for interfering with the provision of health services in the country. She also directed medical interns to dissociate themselves from the ongoing strike. But Robert Lubega, the head of medical interns in Uganda, says interns will not relent.
As medical interns, the year 2017-2018, we are tired of working under poor conditions, of no materials, no supplies. Two, poor remuneration. As you realize, some of our colleagues have actually received so far 545,000 in some sites and others 616,000 for the month of October, which is contrary to what has been aired out in the media, the 940,000. So we are saying that unless the Ministry of Health and the relevant stakeholders give us 2.5 million Uganda shillings, for now, we are also going to keep laying down our tools as medical interns of the year 2017-2018.
Dr. Obuku Ekwaru, the head of medical association, says the negotiations with the government were yielding fruits until the minister issued that directive. He says the doctors are acting according to both the domestic and international legal provisions that grant them a right to peaceful industrial action.
This negative action by the Ministry of Health has threatened the progress made so far with the Right Honorable Prime Minister. The doctors' fraternity have considered escalation of the industrial action. This is the adverse effect that we risk by employing strategies which instead unleash the wrath of the medical fraternity. The doctors are considering immediate withdrawal of emergency health services.
Doctors in Uganda have been on strike since the beginning of last week. They demand better pay and better working conditions. Currently, entry-level doctors are paid 1.1 million Uganda shillings, or about $300 per month, while senior doctors are paid 3.4 million Uganda shillings, or about $900 per month. Doctors are demanding for the lowest paid doctor to earn 8.5 million Uganda shillings, or about $2,400, and senior doctors to be paid around $1,2500 per month. Currently, there are about 2,300 practicing doctors across the country. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Monday, November 13th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, Senator George Weah, presidential candidate of the Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, has described as mere propaganda and a fallacy allegations that he will bring back to Liberia convicted war criminal Charles Taylor if Weah is elected president. The allegations were made by Allen White, the American investigator who played a key role in gathering evidence against Mr. Taylor during the Sierra Leone war crimes trial while appearing on the VOA television program Straight Talk Africa. White said the international community spent a lot of money, time, and effort to bring peace to Liberia and West Africa. Weah has admitted speaking to Charles Taylor by phone. He accused White of working with Weah's opponents and trying to destabilize Liberia by making allegations that White cannot substantiate. We assess speaking with Taylor by phone is far removed from releasing him from prison, something he said only the international community has the power to do.
Well, James, for me, I'm just a map of Ghana. I have no truth to it, you know, and it's a fallacy. You know, this is a man working with other political enemies here in Liberia, interfering with our politics, and just making a lot of loose talk, you know. A lot of allegations here that he himself cannot even tell you whether it's true or because according to him, he's assuming because he was told or someone said.
Ambassador Weah, you said that you think Mr. Allen White is working for your opponents. Do you have any proof?
Well, I'm not thinking. I know that he's working for some political party. He calls himself a lobbyist, you know. You know, I met Allen White, you know, when we started the CDC. Chubby Charlie, you know, originally Yuri, Alexander Wampo brought him and said that he's a lobbyist and he signed a contract with CDC, you know, that was my first encounter with him. And then he could not do the work and CDC broke the contract. And now he asked for indemnity and CDC paid him. And that was it. You know, that's the last time I heard about Mr. Allen White.
So what do you say to the ordinary Liberian or to Mr. White himself who might have a concern about the fact that you have spoken with former President Charles Taylor?
What I would say to the Liberian voter, I said it before, you know, someone was on the phone after my declaration, and he was on the phone close by me, and I showed Mr. Taylor heard the voice and asked, who was that? And he said, well, Senator Weah, and I said, hi. That was it. And this is not my first time saying it. You know, but that doesn't determine freeing Charles Taylor from prison. You know, I know, even the Allen White know. He claims to be an investigator. He knows that Charles Taylor is who I've been monitored. He knows that I have no power to bring Charles Taylor back. He knows that. And everyone as well. So they just, as I said, the map of Ghana is all fallacy.
Another issue that came out of the Straight Talk Africa program was that, and let me ask this question, did you make a deal with President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf that if she can support your candidacy, that if President George Weah would appoint her son, Robert Sirleaf, to succeed you as Senator of Masurado County?
Well, I listened to that, you know, but again, the person that said he's not sure. So you asking me to answer to a mere propaganda or gossip. But at the same time, Mr. Bolton, you realize that I don't appoint people to this position. It's an elected position. Everyone that becomes senator in Liberia was elected by the Liberian people. It's not an appointed job. So there's no way that you can make a deal. That's not possible. But again, you must know that Robert Sirleaf has a constitutional right. He's a Liberian. If Robert Sirleaf was in my party, CDC, and you go through the ranks and file through a convention, and he's qualified to be on our ticket, definitely as a political leader, that's the candidate I will be carrying. I will be telling people to vote for him. But he's not in my party. You know, so it's far from reality. Besides that, why would I make a deal with Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to support me, and then I support her son? I don't need to make a deal, you know. I've never sat down with Manasseri to make a deal. Those who are that trying to link with Manasseri, yes, I have a friendship and I have a respect with Manasseri. And as I said, I would never, ever disrespect the sitting president of the Republic of Liberia, because one day, if I become president in this country, I would not want for anyone to disrespect me. And those that are carrying the news and trying to link me with Manasseri, I respect for her. She's the president. I worked for her before as peace ambassador. And I work in the government as senator. And I respect the president of the republic.
So do you think there are other people who are trying to disrespect the president?
Well, I believe so. Those that are trying to put lies and false allegations, they are disrespecting the president of the republic. Because if you saying to people that she's not honest, you know, she's corrupt, there's disrespect.
So does the president support you, Ambassador Weah? Does she support your candidacy?
Well, I said no. Madam Sirleaf, she's a partisan of a unity party, and I am a partisan of the Coalition for Democratic Change. So I would not suggest that she's supporting me.
As Liberian presidential candidate George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, you are speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Tomorrow, Senator Weah will speak on the prevailing electoral crisis in Liberia. In Sierra Leone, the publicity secretary of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, Lahai Lawrence Lima, says he fears the police plan to arrest him today, Monday, when he shows up at the Criminal Investigation Department for trespassing on the premises of the Sierra Leone Broadcasting Corporation. In a press release, the SLBC said Mr. Lima horrified broadcasters when he stormed onto the premises and used profanity. But Lima says the station failed to provide fair coverage during an interview with a guest from the ruling APC party, who he said was disparaging SLPP's 2018 presidential candidate, Julius Maada Bio.
There has been this political propaganda smearing the character of our presidential candidate. Now, coming to the point in issue where on Monday, 6th November, I heard on the national broadcasting station, which is the SLBC, announcing that they will be interviewing the APC Southern Region publicity secretary, who happens to be Mr. Franklin Rogers, who has had a claim against the presidential candidate of the SLPP, retired Brigadier Maada Bio. It appears to me that they have prepared for Mr. Franklin Rogers over the weekend to host him on Monday without any reference to the party. And so when I had that information that they'll be interviewing him, so I called on the studio that you are interviewing Franklin Rogers, who has been on the radio all this while, castigating retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, insulting retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, which is tantamount or contrary to communique we signed with the Political Parties Registration Commission that was sponsored by the United Nations Development Programs. As the image maker party, I am on my way to your studio now.
I have in front of me a press release from the Sierra Leone Broadcasting Corporation. It says here that you went to the facilities of the national broadcaster uninvited, and that you frightened everybody because you threatened them, including the female presenters.
To say I am uninvited, that is not the point, or that is not true. The national broadcaster is a public corporation. And I am a citizen of this country, and besides the national publicity secretary for the main opposition.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the publicity secretary of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. The Sierra Leone police say all they want Mr. Lima to do is present himself to the police and give his side of the story. Francis Munu is inspector general of the Sierra Leone National Police.
Well, I am aware of a report that has been made against him, for which the police requested that he present himself so as to give his own side of the story. That is as far as I know. And we look forward to seeing him reporting himself to the CID, because in Sierra Leone, as well as in all liberal democracies, it is the police that has primacy in the maintenance of law and order. And in the event the police invites you for any reason, it's your responsibility to report to them. So we are looking forward to receiving him.
Francis Munu is Inspector General of the Sierra Leone National Police. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Police in the Gambia on Sunday quelled what they said was a peaceful protest organized by the group Occupy Westfield. Armed police intervention unit officers stormed the busy Westfield intersection to disperse the protesters. Pandere Umbai reports.
The protesters stormed the vicinity of Westfield, one of the busiest intersections in the Gambia, where they vented their outrage and dissatisfaction at the National Water and Electricity Company, NAWEC. NAWEC is Gambia's main power company. Of late, the company has come under fire for its inability to provide an uninterrupted water and electricity supply to Gambians. Aliuba is the leader of the group calling itself Occupy Westfield.
We remain firm and resolute in our resolve to exercise our right to assemble peacefully as guaranteed by Section 25 of the Constitution. The police continue to invoke Section 5 of the Public Order Act, which itself is unconstitutional and has been challenged in the Supreme Court of the Gambia. We won't cower down at the 11th hour and let draconian laws win over the Constitution.
No.
We stand in solidarity with the supreme law of the land and most of all our human right to gather in peace and protest.
Yes.
Over the weekend, the Inspector General of Police issued a statement revoking the permit that was issued to the Occupy Westfield protesters. The IGP cited the issue of national security to justify the permit revocation. He also appealed to parents to keep their children off the streets on Sunday, the police press release never deterred the Occupy Westfield protesters from going ahead with the planned protests. Gambian rapper Ali Cham was among the protesters on the ground.
We are young Gambians. We are all responsible citizens with responsibility, and we are practicing our constitutional right as Gambians. We are trying to defend the democracy that we fought for, the democracy that led to many people losing their lives.
Khalifa Salah is the member for Serekunda. He tells the VOA that the protest was a test for the Barrow government. Salah calls for restraint in handling the right to peaceful assembly.
I think my opinion is very clear. I believe that to disperse them is unwarranted. That we will be advising the government to actually change its way in that respect. I would not want to continue to emphasize that the government should register a clear distinction between threat to national security and the exercise of freedom of assembly.
That was Pandere Mbai reporting. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the list of African qualifiers for the 2018 Russia World Cup, as Morocco and Tunisia completed CAF's lineup at the 2018 FIFA World Cup, securing the last of Africa's spots at Russia 2018. The Atlas Lions recorded an impressive 2-0 victory away to Cote d'Ivoire, while a goalless stalemate at home to Libya was enough for the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia to pip Congo DR to top spot in Group A. Both nations will join Nigeria, Egypt and Senegal as Africa's representatives at the global finals next year. Senegal joined the two on Friday when defeating South Africa 2-0 in Polokwane, paving the way for the Teranga Lions of Senegal to return to global competition for the first time in 16 years. Morocco will make their first appearance at the global finals since France 1998, while Tunisia will make their World Cup return for the first time since Germany 2006. And staying with the World Cup qualifiers from Africa, a stone-throwing mob injured 22 police officers in Brussels when celebrations over Morocco's qualification for football's World Cup turned violent. Belgian police said damage from the riot included a burnt car, smashed glass, and looted shops. Riot police were sent out to control a crowd of about 300 people after the final whistle, at one point firing water cannon at small groups of stone-throwing football fans and officers who had to deal with torch cars and looted shops. Away from the World Cup qualifiers, Rwanda filled the final place at the 2018 African Nations Championship CHAN on Sunday, despite only drawing 0-0 in Kigali against Ethiopia in the second leg of a playoff. The Rwandans qualified 3-2 on aggregate, having won the first leg by that score in Addis Ababa last weekend. Egypt withdrew from the competition for home-based footballers, citing the refusal of clubs to release their players, and this gave Rwanda and Ethiopia a second chance to qualify. Now to athletics. Samuel Kalali has won the Athens Marathon, beating Milton Rotich by just over 2 minutes in a Kenyan sweep of the top five. Kalali broke away from the pre-race favorite Rotich after the 35-kilometer mark to win the hilly course in 2 hours, 12 minutes and 17 seconds. Rotich placed second in 2 hours, 14 minutes and 18 seconds, and Jonathan Kiptoo was third in 2 hours, 16 minutes, 8 seconds. The women's race was much tighter, with 18-year-old Ethiopian Badaru Badani winning in 2 hours, 34 minutes, 18 seconds. That's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, November 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very productive week.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.